Okay, so well, thank you for the kind introduction. So, and also thank the organizer for inviting me to speak. So I'd like to tell you about the relation between positive energy theorems in a gravitational system and certain set of information inequalities. Let me turn this on. Okay, so I guess it's get started. All right. So first I'd like to explain the motivation of thinking about these things. So in the last several years, I have been interested in this question called swampland question, which is that, I spelled it out here. So given an effective theory of gravity, how can one judge whether it is realized as a low energy approximation to a consistent quantum theory of gravity with ultraviolet completion, and such as string theory? So this is an interesting question, and the fact that you can even ask a question like that is interesting, because if you take quantum field theory without gravity, then it is expected that you can basically write down any low energy effective theory action which is renormalizable, and you expect that it is completed in some way in ultraviolet, either embedded in the asymptotic free theory, this or that. But that does not seem to be the case. There seems to be some non-trivial constraint in order for low energy effective theory to be upgraded to consistent quantum theory of gravity. And then it would be interesting to find out what these conditions are. Such condition may even be useful in making some predictions, for example. So let me first list just a few examples of such constraints that we know of before we get into the main subject of today's talk. So we know actually that there are certain constraints on the symmetry that low energy effective theory can have. So for example, that if you have a theory coupled to gravity, then it is expected that low energy effective theory has no global symmetry, that all symmetry has to be gauged. And this is motivated by discussion based on property of black hole and its evaporation. And there has been some more recent work by Daniel Harrow that sort of explain this using holography when the theory is realized in asymptotically anti-Doita space. And there are also additional properties like symmetry has to be compact, or about the spectrum of electric and magnetic charges for gauge symmetries. So this is also surprising, because in field theory, it's not obvious that all charges are realized. And in fact, in cases where you can actually calculate charges, often you have some interesting pattern. And interesting that coupling to gravity forces you to realize all possible charges that are consistent with Dirac quantization conditions. So there are more conjectures that gravity is supposed to be the weakest force in nature. And this is sort of stronger version of no global symmetry conjecture, because if you take the limit when the coupling becomes small, then this condition reduces to the condition that there are no global symmetry. So there are some motivation for this conjecture. I do not have time to discuss it. I'm just giving you some example of known way that a swampland is delineated. There are also some constraints on moduli space. These conditions are not as strong as conditions on symmetry, because these conditions are mostly based on example. So there are various known constructions of low energy effective theory, starting from string theory or M theories. And there are certain conditions that, for example, in my paper with Cameron Buffer, pointed out, which seems to be common to all these low energy effective theory, about the property of moduli space. Those are the space of parameters of low energy effective theories. And some of these actually have been more recently shown to be true if you assume that the low energy effective theory has some higher supersymmetries. There seems to be also constraint on Carabiao moduli space, a topology of the Carabiao space. So this is even more restrictive, in a sense that we are assuming that you start with 10 or 11 dimensional string theory or M theory and compactify it on Carabiao space. Then the type of topology that you can have restricts the type of particle spectra that you can have in low energy effective theory. So it's kind of interesting to find out whether there are constraints. And there are actually some conjecture by mathematicians, But there are also conjectures that you can derive from various study of string theory on Calabi-Yau space. So for example, there are constraints coming from modular invariance of wall sheet of string theory compactified on Calabi-Yau space. And then there are also certain constraint on topology that seems to be holding based on non-construction. So for example, Washington Taylor and his student did some exhaustive search of a class of Calabi-Yau manifold and found that there seems to be certain constraint on the Hodge number of Calabi-Yau manifold. So anyway, so these are all sort of, these are examples of non-conditions for low energy effective theory action that seems to be universal in all non-construction. All the constructions that we know of. So now, let me turn to the main subject of the, my talk today, which is the constraint that you may consider deriving, assuming that gravity theory has holographic realization. So if you suppose that you have a low energy effective theory with gravity, and whose gravity solution whose geometry asymptote to Anchorita space at infinity. And then it is generally expected that if you have consistent quantum theory gravity like that, then such theory should be equivalent to conformal field theory on the boundary of the Anchorita space. And this is, of course, ADS shift correspondence. So the question is that can we use this knowledge? Can we use the fact that gravity theory has to be dual to conformal field theory to put some constraint on the gravitational theory? Are you raising your hand or no? Okay. So more specifically, if you have gravitational theory in D plus one dimensional Anchorita space times compact space, possibly like sphere or other interesting spaces, then this theory is supposed to be equivalent to D dimensional conformal field theory. And so I'm focusing on entanglement entropy that has been already been discussed many times in this school and workshop. So suppose you have some domain A in the space-like section of this conformal field theory, and let's take the state psi, and then you can define entanglement density matrix rho by taking partial trace over the Hilbert space over the complement of this domain. And this one, therefore, acts on the Hilbert space over this domain A. And then you can define entanglement entropy associated to this domain A in this way. And this quantity measures the entanglement between the region A and the complement. So this is a quantity that that have been discussed by many talks already. So when this dual gravitational theory is weakly coupled, and therefore when this theory can be, the bulk theory can be described by smooth geometry with Einstein-Hilbert action coupled to matter field, then by the celebrated Ryu-Takayanagi formula, which this year is the 10th anniversary of, it is expected that to the leading order in the gravitational calculation in the Einstein gravity approximation, that this same quantity can be expressed as area of minimum surface ending on the boundary of A divided by 4 times Newton constant. So this is what I'm going to use. And then I will be focusing on various inequality involving this type of condition, this type of quantities. And there are actually three types of inequality that are of interest. One type of inequalities are the ones that are satisfied both in CFT side and the gravitational side. But there are some inequalities involving entanglement entropy and related informational quantities that are satisfied by any conformal field theory, basically assuming some unitarity of the Hilbert space, et cetera, but may not be true in gravitational theory. And then there are opposite ones. Also that there are inequalities satisfied by Ryu-Takayanagi formula, but may not be satisfied by conformal field theory. So all these inequalities are interesting. And for the purpose of delineating the swampland, the second type of inequality is interesting. Because if you can find gravitational theory where you can compute some Ryu-Takayanagi type entanglement entropy, and if those entanglement entropy violate the inequality that has to be true in any conformal field theory, then such gravitational theory cannot be dual to consistent conformal field theory, therefore has to be swampland, assuming that any consistent gravitational theory has to be dual to conformal field theory. So this is basically the tool that I'll be using. This is also interesting because we'll be interested in knowing when conformal field theory can have gravitational dual. And this can tell us some of the feature or characteristic of conformal field theory that can be described geometrically in terms of Einstein gravity. So I draw some Venn diagram, just like going back to the elementary school, to organize these three types of inequalities. So these are a set of inequalities that has to be satisfied by gravitational theories, and these are inequalities that has to be satisfied by conformal field theories. And in the intersection, there is, for example, the strong subadditivity conditions that have been proven, I guess Patrick explained yesterday by in the 70s, I guess. But it turned out to be also true by Ryu-Takayanagi formula, as shown by Matt and Tadashi, I think. And the proof in the case of Ryu-Takayanagi formula is substantially simpler than the general proof for any quantum mechanical system. As I said, I'll be focusing on this side, where you have a set of inequality that has, that has to be true in any conformal field theory, but may not be true in gravitational theory. And so I'll point out that the positivity and the monotonicity of relative entropy can be such examples, and then I will discuss consequences of that for gravitational theories. On this side, the famous example is a monogamy of mutual information that was proven by Patrick and Matt and Alex. The three? Okay, good. So so this is always true for Ryu-Takayanagi formula, but may not be true for a general quantum mechanical system. And in fact, more recently, we found some generalization of such inequality. So so as I said, such inequalities are interesting because conformal field theory states so this shows that when a conformal field theory state has gravitational dual, then it may have some interesting type of entanglement properties that are not true for general state. So let me just briefly tell you about such inequalities first. So let me just briefly say what I know about the entropy inequalities. So for the classical Shannon entropy, I think it has been proven that there are an infinite number of independent entropy inequality for more than three regions. So this has been had some important implication on information processing tasks. On the other hand, for Neumann entropy, for example, the entanglement entropy is an example of that. In that case, for more than three regions, we don't know what the complete set of inequality is. So for three, I think that strong subadditivity is the strongest set of inequalities. But in general, it's not known, and there are some indications, I'm told, that the number of independent inequality may be infinite. But interestingly, so last year, we found that if you restrict yourself to holographic state, namely that those that are realized gravitationally, then there is actually a finite algorithm to classify all entropy inequalities. And for each number of regions, there are actually finitely many independent inequalities, and we are able to classify them for a small number of regions. Patrick briefly talked about this yesterday, but entropy is a useful way to describe entropy inequalities in terms of cone. So for example, if you have n regions, you can think of allowed entropy allow the value of entropy as vector in 2 to the n minus 1 dimensions, where n is the number of regions. And you have 2 to the n minus 1 because you consider regions, entropy for the region A, region B, and their unions. So you can either have one region in or out, so you have 2 to the n. But you don't consider empty sets, so you subtract minus 1. You subtract 1. So it makes a cone. And so you can easily see in the case of a holographic system or a system that you can tensor to realize Hilbert space that entropy vector populate inside of this cone. And so if you have this kind of setup, then you can see whether you have exhausted all possible entropy inequalities. Because if you can, so you have this kind of convex rational polyhedral cone. So if you can realize all the external rates, then this, you can populate all inside also, so that you know that you have exhausted all the entropy inequalities. So that was a way that we checked that we have complete classification for 2, 3, 4 regions. It would be interesting to actually find out whether this entropy inequality can be derived by assuming some property, additional property of conformal field theories. For example, assume that you have conformal field theory, but you have a gap, for example, so which is required for nice gravitational description. Would that be sufficient to derive it? One can discuss that. For example, there is some question whether this is sufficient because, for example, some of the entropy inequality can be violated if you include one loop correction in the bulk. So that this might still be true, but entropy inequality can be violated. So you might need to have some additional conditions. But it'd be interesting to find out what kind of condition you can assume for conformal field theory without directly referring to gravitational realization, and see whether some of the entropy inequality can be derived with such set of assumption. Okay, so that was this side. So that was like 20 minutes introduction to what I would like to talk about, which is this side, namely that the kind of entropy inequality that must be true for any consistent quantum theory of gravity, but may not be true for certain low energy effective theory action for gravitational system. And so I'd like to point out that this actually is related to positivity of quasi-local energy. So basically what I'm going to tell you about is that relative entropy is energy from the point of view of the gravitational system. That you can define some localized notion of canonical energy associated in the gravitational system, and that to be the gravitational equivalent of this relative entropy. So therefore, positivity conditions or monotonicity conditions that you can require can translate into positivity conditions or monotonicity condition for this canonical energy. So I would like to tell you about what these energies are. So of course, I mean, we know that energy and entropy are closely related concepts from the 19th century. That was how entropy came up with the efficiency of steam engines. And more in the case of gravitational context, this has been made quite clear by the formalism developed by Robert Ward and the collaborators, and that is what I'm going to use. So supposing that you have space like Cauchy surface, so we are considering asymptotically ADS space. So you choose space like surface ending on the ADS boundary. And you choose subspace of this Cauchy surface. So in the following, the kind of subspace that I will be considering is a subspace that is sandwiched between the boundary domain A and the Ryu Takayanagi surface ending on the boundary of that domain. So you have this type of regions. This is original region A that I was discussing, and then this is associated Ryu Takayanagi surface. So suppose you have such domain, then actually there has been long discussion in general relativity about how you can define notion of quasi-local energy, namely the energy associated to some subspace in the Cauchy surface. There have been lots of interest in that, and then there's a long history starting with Brown York, and more recently, Yao and his collaborator have been working have series of work on that, and defining notion of quasi-local energy, and proving positivity in certain cases. And so they're a very interesting body of work in this case. But in this context, it's actually we are in a much easier situation because this domain is defined in a diffeomorphic invariant way. Because the notion of region A is well-defined, it's diffeomorphic because the coordinate transformation does not change the location. The coordinate diffeomorphism invariance that should be considered as a gauge symmetry, in the gravitational system does not extend towards the boundary. So the notion of A, the domain A, is diffeomorphic invariant, and real Takayanagi surface ending on the boundary of A is diffeomorphic invariant notion. So this subspace sigma is diffeomorphically invariantly defined. So we are sort of much easier situation that way. So in the next two slides, I'm just going to review what you'd teach, or if you are professors, or if you're a student, you might have just learned like 5 years ago in undergraduate physics course, namely defining the notion of Hamiltonian and energy. But I'm sort of, we have two columns. So one is, this side is the undergraduate physics course. And this is a gravitational analog of that, so that we know exactly what we are doing in the gravitational side. I'm doing that because I got confused when I first started learning about world formalism. But then if you translate everything in undergraduate physics, it's actually very easy. So that's what I would like to discuss that. So for example, let me start with analogy. So suppose you have a Lagrangian then, like that, and for the classical mechanical system, with coordinate Q and kinetic term and the potential term. Then if you take a variation of this Lagrangian, you get the equation motion modulo the total derivative term in time. And then, but this total derivative term is important because this is related to the symplectic form of the dynamical system. Namely that this theta, that is supposed, theta is equal to this thing, is equal to momentum times variation of the coordinate, and so if you take one more variation, you get a symplectic form, right? I'm using delta for external derivative because I'm reserving the Roman D for the space-time exterior derivative. So I wanted to distinguish that. So for example, in contrast, suppose you have a gravitational system in the bulk. So I'm using G for both metric and whatever matter field that you may have in the gravitational system. So suppose L of G, for G is a metric and matter, is a Lagrangian density of the system. So then again, if you take a variation of this Lagrangian density with respect to this dynamical variable, you get equation motion modulo total derivative. And this total derivative is what you may call presymplectic form, namely that if you take one more variation like that, it gives you symplectic form. Okay, so you have a symplectic form, then if you have symplectic form, you can define Hamiltonian in this way. So one way to think about Hamiltonian is that its Poisson bracket with dynamical variable generates time translation. Or in the language of differential form, we say that if you take exterior derivative of Hamiltonian, you get time variation of the dynamical variable folded with the symplectic form. So you can write it in this way, and if you use the equation motion, you can massage it in this way, and then you see that variation of the Hamiltonian is equal to variation of PQ dot minus Lagrangian, which is your Hamiltonian. So this is how we derive Hamiltonian. So basically, we just repeat the same thing here. So suppose you have a gravitational system. In the case of a gravitational system, you have actually many definitions of time. In fact, infinitely many, because any sort of vector field over sigma with appropriate boundary condition on the boundary of sigma, which I will be talking about later, generate a diffeomorphism, and that is a symmetry of your system. So therefore, you should be able to define conserved quantity associated with that, which in fact generate in general gauge transformation. But if depending on the boundary of condition of sigma, Xi, I guess, it can generate a global charge also. Okay? But let's consider that. So what is a generator associated to this vector field Xi? Okay, so let's denote that as H of Xi. Then the variation of that, so in the spirit of this, the variation of this dynamical variable G is a Lie derivative in the direction of Xi. So therefore, variation of a Hamiltonian should be equal to variation in that direction folded with a symplectic form. Then, if you use some standard property of Lie derivative and the equation of motion, you can write it as total derivative. But there is one important thing here. Here, total derivative, exterior derivative D, include both time-like direction, derivative in time-like direction, the space-like direction. So therefore, when you do integration by part, you actually get boundary term here, which is actually quite important. It's actually very, this plays a very important role in the gravitational system. So in any way, so this is totally analogous to the formula that you probably are familiar with. And so variation of the generator HC for the diffeomorphism Xi is given by this space-like integral, which is total derivative, plus boundary term. This boundary term, as I said, is very important. So because you can write it in this way, but then you can ask, well, can you integrate this in the space of field to actually define Hamiltonian? And sometimes you can, and sometimes you cannot. The case you can is, of course, a case when you can write this boundary term as a total derivative. And it depends on the boundaries that you are choosing and the boundary condition that you are choosing and the property of this vector field Xi that you are choosing. And in a good situation, you can find such B. And then in that case, you can write Hamiltonian as some quantity that you can integrate in the bulk of a space-like section and the boundary. And this is actually a conserved charge, that the exterior derivative of this is zero. So it's conserved quantity, which you integrate, but then there is a boundary term. For example, the famous Gibbons-Hawking term in the Einstein gravity is an example of that. So in that case, you have this Einstein-Hilbert term with possibly cosmological constant, and this is a symplectic form that you can derive using this type of procedure. And then in that case, this B is proportional to some combination of extrinsic curvature. And this is required in order to integrate this boundary term. Okay. So this was sort of a standard formalism of defining Hamiltonian in gravitational system. Now I'd like to relate that to the notion of relative entropy. So going back to conformal field theory, so there has been actually, fortunately, already some lecture about comparing two different density matrix, etc. So relative entropy is an example of how distinguishing two different density matrices. So here I would like to distinguish between the vacuum in conformal field theory, which in the gravitational side is a pure ADS geometry, and any state in conformal field theory. And this can even be mixed state like a black hole. And then those are corresponding to some, so here I drew it as some kind of pure state, but this can be a mixed state, for example. And then but we are interested in the case when this corresponds to some gravitational solution. So then if you have a domain A, you can again take trace over complement and define density matrices for the vacuum state and certain excited state in conformal field theory. And the relative entropy is a measure to compare these two different density matrices. And it turns out that when this domain is like spherical ball, then of fixed radius r, then this term here, which is modular Hamiltonian for the vacuum, is simplified, and it is expressed in terms of energy momentum local integral of energy momentum tensor. This can be, in fact, this modular Hamiltonian becomes one of the conformal generator of conformal field theory, which is and the symmetry of the vacuum state. So relative entropy, if you have, therefore, a holographic dual gravitational theory, then the relative entropy is the sum of two terms. And the second term is actually the minus of entanglement entropy of the state rho. So therefore, it must have expression in terms of Ryu Takayanagi formula minus of the Ryu Takayanagi formula. And this is a modular Hamiltonian. But as I said, when the domain is spherical, then this has a modular Hamiltonian can be expressed as integral of energy momentum tensor of the conformal field theory, which according to the holographic renormalization group formula can be expressed in terms of asymptotic property of metric tensor as it goes toward the boundary of ADS. So therefore, both of them has holographic expression. So it already has a holographic expression, but that expression now is integral over boundary A and also over Ryu Takayanagi formula. But it is actually now straightforward to relate that to certain Hamiltonian in the following way. So as I said, Hamiltonian on the other hand, Hamiltonian of the gravitational system is expressed as integral of some bulk current J of C and boundary term, if you have one. But this bulk quantity is conserved, so that means that in this notation, the exterior derivative is zero. So in a nice situation, you can find that, well, this domain is contractible. In general, you can always find Q so that J is equal to dQ. Well, in general, Q may not have a nice formula, but in a good situation, which we will be, this Q can be expressed in terms of local quantity in a metric and matter field. So if you have that, then this is total derivative. So everything can be expressed in terms of the boundary integral. So if I choose the bound domain sigma to be the region sandwiched between A and Ryu Takayanagi surface, then the boundary of sigma is, of course, Ryu Takayanagi surface and A. So you can write this as, again, this type of integral. So the point, one of the points we made in our paper is that in a case when you have Einstein gravity, or in general, when in the case when Ryu Takayanagi formula can be expressed, so you can have, for example, the higher derivative gravity, and then there is a question of what is the Ryu Takayanagi formula for higher derivative gravity is, but in the case when you can use word formula to define entropy in such a situation, then you can always find certain vector field C in such a way that this integrand over the boundary region A is giving the modular Hamiltonian, and this integrand over Ryu Takayanagi surface gives you the Ryu Takayanagi formula, or its generalization according to the prescription by Ward. So therefore, we found that there is always choice of C, so that this relative entropy can be expressed as a difference of the canonical energy associated to the state rho and the vacuum state. Yes?
At this stage, have you used the fact that it's minimal, the surface is minimal?
So I think that we have utilized the fact that the surface is minimal. Yes, please. Yes. So in particular, as we discussed in one of the lecture yesterday, that if rho is rho naught is summer state, this looks like free energy, indeed, yes. So of course I'm utilizing the fact that entropy and energy is closely related, but I'm making this more explicit by showing exactly what kind of energy it is. And that is actually the canonical Hamiltonian for this gravitational system with particular choice of vector field for this domain. So this vector field is defined in a very specific way. So namely, it is a vector field which approaches to one of the conformal Killing vectors towards the boundary of ADS. It vanishes on the Ryu Takayanagi surface in such a way that its first derivative is related to the binomial vector to the Ryu Takayanagi surface. So you have a very well prescribed the boundary condition for the vector field at the boundary of sigma. And then we can show that such vector field always exists. And so for such vector field, we can show that relative entropy is equal to the canonical quasi-local energy. So it follows automatically that the positivity of relative entropy implies that this energy is bounded from below by that of the vacuum. And moreover, it vanishes, or it becomes that of the vacuum vector, vacuum state, if and only if it is actually itself the vacuum, because this vanishes if and only if rho is equal to rho naught. We were very much, at least I personally, were very much motivated by the earlier work by Faulkner, Guicke, Hartmann, Myers, and Van Ramstonk 3 years ago already, where they showed that this to the linear order implies that vanishing of the relative entropy for the leading variation, and they show that if you compute Ryu Takayanagi for the entropy using the formula for the Einstein gravity, then this implies linearized Einstein equation, which I was very fascinated by that. So we wanted to generalize this in a nonlinear regime, and this is what we arrived at. In this case, you have inequality, so you don't get something like you obtain Einstein equation with matter, but instead you get some inequality constraint for the system. So it's interesting to find out what exactly it means. For example, last year, already, I guess, 1.5 years ago, I and my student Bogdan Stoiker and Jennifer Lin, and also my colleague at Caltech, Matilda Marcori, and separately, independently, the group in Vancouver, found that if you consider next leading order from this linear variation, then this positivity and the monotonicity of relative entropy implies a certain positivity condition for the integrated matter-energy momentum tensor. So this is a xi that we have been using. There is a very explicit form. And then T mu nu is the energy momentum tensor for the matter in the bulk. And for the first non-trivial order where you take into account the bulk reaction of the matter to the metric, then this condition implies that the zero-zero component of matter energy momentum tensor integrated over this domain sigma has to be positive. So more generally, there is a contribution from there is a gravitational contribution to the energy. So this will be the expression that I'll be writing, namely that the total Hamiltonian, canonical Hamiltonian, including both matter contribution and the gravitational contribution, has to be bounded by the value by vacuum. So sort of we are going in an increasing nonlinear order. In this sequence of work. So yes? Yeah, so I think this is a limit of, so we checked that if I take the limit where we extract the first non-trivial order, so if I start with this inequality and I take the limit corresponding to this, then we reproduced this inequality. So this is implied by, so this is a generalization in that sense. So these are the conditions that I wanted to point out, that any low energy effective theory of consistent ultraviolet complete quantum theory of gravity must satisfy these conditions. So the interesting question is that are these strong conditions, or what would that imply for low energy effective action? So for example, that if you just write down Einstein gravity coupled to a single scalar field, and in anti-theta space you can have a tachyonic mass scalar field, for example, as far as the mass square satisfies the Brayton-Rolle-Friedmann bound, and then can you rule out some of such theories assuming some property of the potential. So I started looking into that, but it's not, we don't know yet whether that implies non-trivial condition. And then there is actually some recent series of interesting work, starting with Jefferies, Lukovitz, Marzen, Shiri, and also Shidong and Daniel Harrow. And more recently, last week, there is a very interesting paper by Daniel Harrow from conformal field theory point of view, where there is a relation between relative entropy you can compute for conformal field theory and relative entropy that you can compute in a bulk gravitational system. And there is some discussion of whether such results would imply that this positivity condition should be automatically satisfied for any low energy gravitational system because you can compute this quantity in purely bulk language. So this is something I want to understand better, because if that is the case, then this positivity can be actually derived for large class of low energy effective theory action, assuming simple property like narrow energy condition for the matter energy momentum condition, matter energy momentum tensor. So then we'll be proving some new type of positivity theorem. So rather than putting some stringent constraint on low energy effective theory, perhaps this can be actually indication that there is a new class of positive energy theorem for gravitational system that you can derive. So this might, so for example, there is a precedent of that. So for many years, many of us thought that the Bekenstein bound for field theory is actually one example of swampland condition. That in order for quantum field theory to be coupled to a gravitational system, that quantum field theory has to satisfy some non-trivial conditions. So it was shown by Horacio 8 years ago that this actually is a consequence of positivity of relative entropy for the quantum field theory. So this turned out to be actually not the delineation of the swampland, but turned out to be actually a property that is true for any reasonable quantum field theory. So this positivity, positive energy theorem may be an example of that. So what I would like to actually, I'm currently thinking about is whether you can actually go out and prove such positivity of quasi-local energy. So anyway, so that's more or less I wanted to tell you about. I have one more comment to make, which is an interesting sort of corollary of what we did, and maybe related to some of the things that we might hear in coming days. So in the paper that we wrote in 2014, we also noticed some curious fact that if I take actually, so this is a relative entropy which is positive. If you take derivative of this relative entropy with respect to the size of the domain, it should also be positive because of the monotonicity. You can ask what happens if you take one more derivative with respect to the radius. It turns out that you can express that as integral of matter energy momentum tensor over Ryu Takayanagi surface. Now, here we are considering the situation in the 2014 paper where we are taking into account considering the leading non-trivial back reaction to the metric. So that means that this Ryu Takayanagi surface is evaluated in the original unperturbed pure ADS geometry. So in the pure ADS geometry, there is actually a nice property that was derived from the day of Helgason and by making use of property of homogeneous space, that if you know the value of integral of local quantity in the bulk over the Ryu Takayanagi surface, you can invert it. That you can then consider integral over all these quantities over the space of minimum surface. For example, suppose you want to compute the value of T00 at this point, what you should do is to consider all possible minimum surface passing through this point and average them over in with appropriate measure. Then you can actually derive the value of T00 in this way. So we thought that was interesting because that means that if you know the relative entropy for all the domain on the boundary, you can actually reconstruct the value of matter energy momentum tensor locally at a given point. So this is analog of radon transform. And we found that, in fact, this feature persists in a nonlinear order, that in fact, if you do the same kind, exactly the same, if you perform exactly the same derivative action on the relative entropy for the fully nonlinear situation, you can still write the result as integral of the conserved current associated to the conserved energy current, as you say, which is sort of nonlinear version of this energy momentum tensor integrated over the Liu Takayanagi surface. Unfortunately, mathematical literature on the inversion of this type of integral for general gravitational solution is very limited. There is some theorem about uniqueness or the sort of injectivity of this kind of map, which says that the knowing this quantity, in principle, it would be enough to reconstruct the value of this quantity, although we don't have an explicit formula for that. In the case of pure ADS, there is a beautiful formula by Helgason, and then there's this generalization, which gives you exactly what kind of integral you need to do to reconstruct the value of T00. We don't have that here, but there is some theorem that shows that this knowing this is essentially sufficient to reconstruct the local value of this physical quantity. So that seems to be interesting. So that's actually all I want to say. I guess I'm ending 10 minutes earlier, but I'm the only one between you and the dinner, so it's good to finish early. So I was interested in how to characterize low energy effective theories that can emerge in a low energy approximation to consistent quantum theory, such as string theory. So I briefly reviewed some known constraint, and then I'm proposing new type of constraint that implied by information inequalities. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you. Yes. So the question is that in the case of higher derivative gravity, what exactly is a generalization of Liu Takayanagi formula? Rather than me answering it, so I think this is actually what Si Dong and his collaborator is currently working out. So maybe you can, do you want to comment on that?
Right now,
let me give you this one.
Right now, for arbitrary higher derivative theory, one can write down a formula to be evaluated at on an appropriate co-dimension two surface, analogous to the Liu Takayanagi surface. The conjecture is that to get that surface, one should always extremize that same function. We're currently proving that conjecture. So. For arbitrary higher derivative theory, but I think it's true.
Okay, well, thank you very much. So that seems to be the prescription that one should employ. And I think that in that case, that this formula generalizes Hamiltonian derived by applying this procedure for the higher derivative Lagrangian. Yes, Patrick. Yes. Yes.
Is there some way you can do something like the holographic entropy of Bartek checking collaborators that allow you to look at more general surfaces inside the vault that don't
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. So one of the features that one of the reasons that this positivity quasi-local energy that I define seems to hold for large class of low energy effective action is that it is actually exactly because it integrated version. Integrated version like that. Because for example, in the ADS, you can have a tachyonic scalar field, which as far as the mass square satisfied Brayton-Friedman bound, you can have an upside down potential. So it's relatively easy to violate the positivity of energy locally inside of anti-zeta space. You can temporarily have scalar field to have a large value for and into the far bottom of the potential. So you can have a rather arbitrary large negative value of the potential. And what saves the day for the positivity is that all this scalar field has to come back to the value zero or at the top of the potential at the boundary of ADS. And then you have kinetic energy that you gain. If you require the scalar field to be far below the potential, the scalar field has to climb up and then that gives you kinetic energy. And so sum total of that makes this thing positive. So I worry that if you look for a positivity condition for the local domain inside of ADS, you may not have that feature, and then some of the property that that guarantees the positivity here may not work in such a situation. But that's something interesting thing to think about, I think. Yes. So the question is that what happens to this type of positivity conditions when you include one loop correction in the bulk, I presume. So we thought about this. We don't have a definite statement to make. Certainly in the conformal field theory side, the relative entropy is always positive, including one over n corrections. So it's tempting to think that the analog of gravitational side would be the one loop corrected energy. But we have not been able to actually make this precise. That's a reasonable expectation, but we have not been able to. That's why our paper is restricted to the classical term. Yes. Could you say it again?
Like, suppose you use Pinsker's inequality or something. Does this bind anything if you use something which is slightly more fine-grained than just the positivity of relative entropy? I might be misunderstanding how.
Let me see. So are you referring to the fact that there are some stronger inequalities? Like, for example, the relative entropy is bounded not by zero, but like fidelity or something like that? Is that what you're.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was pointed out to me recently, so I got interested in that, but I don't have, yeah, but it was pointed out to me recently that there are some stronger inequality, and those might have some interesting implication, and I haven't thought too carefully about that, but this is something I want to think about. Any other questions?